To say it's a pleasure and a privilege to welcome Bernard Haitink back to Chicago and back to WFMT would be a great understatement, but Mr. Haitink prefers understatement, I think, to overstatement. He's nodding his head yes, so I'm going to take that as an agreement, and we're just going to dive into our conversation with Bernard Haitink, which we're holding during his 1 week only residency in late October, early November in Chicago 2013, where he's been leading concerts and has two more after we speak of the Bruckner Fourth Symphony and of Mozart's last piano concerto, Emmanuel Axe, his soloist partner in that piece, and of course the Chicago Symphony Orchestra on the stage. Welcome back to Chicago, Maestro Haitink.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be back again. I had wonderful 4 years here as a, I don't know what my title was, but sort of principal guest conductor. Or
no,
something.
You were principal conductor. No guest.
Yeah. And first of all, the contact with the orchestra grew during these 4 years, and it nearly became a friendship with many of them. But I had, of course, the wonderful situation as a principal conductor that I didn't have to make serious decisions. I didn't have to talk to the sponsors unnecessarily, and I could concentrate on the music. And of course, I felt involved, and sometimes I went to auditions, which I like, because then you get, for example, when you have a clarinet audition, you have the clarinet section plus some representatives of the orchestra, but it is not too big a committee. And you have contact with people, and mm-hmm. I like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the important things of conducting, that one should not sit on an iceberg and waiting till the Titanic is coming. But, that you have... You can motivate people, that people can motivate me. It is a very intricate process.
Yeah, yeah. So you had a situation where you could have this contact, but you didn't have to have contacts.
Exactly.
And players could and did and still do approach you or have a connection with you,
yes.
But there weren't meetings and this kind of thing, which that sounds like a dream.
And 4 years was just right, I think.
Yeah.
And it gets longer than all these little irritations and things could happen. But I remember at a very nice farewell party, and I could say it was only pleasure for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is, let's face it, an exception, because indeed, an orchestra can be a hothouse, not so much of intriguing, but of ambitions, and you have to deal with a board and trustees, etc. And of course, it's wonderful that these people give time. And I was quite impressed here in Chicago that they were really music lovers, because that's not always the case.
Right.
And that's irritating for me.
No, it's something that I try to remind people of, and people need to be conscious. It's not each and every one of them or what is the level of expertise, but the trustees here, they come to the concerts and they care about them. They try to get to know as much as they can. And as you say, you don't see that in every city
by
any means.
No, I appreciated that.
Yeah.
But Patricia, my wife, was at the luncheon of ladies, there were 200 or something.
Right.
Because Manny X, who is the soloist this week, had a short lecture and played. And then one of the ladies said, do you, when there was question time,
yes.
Will you conduct a season? Will you, sorry, that's Freudian, will you play as a soloist this season? And you could say, well, madam, yes, tonight. So ignorance is everywhere.
Right. How did you find, now, you have been back since. You, of course, did the Missa Solemnis last year, which was quite an impressive experience for everyone, I think. But also it's a very different kind of experience because of the chorus and so on. So this was a chance to come back with a symphonic program. And how did you find the orchestra?
It was lovely to come back. How experienced one is and how long one is in this business. The first rehearsal is always, how will it be?
Mm-hmm.
And I started, and I could play through the whole first movement. And it was there. I mean, they were so attentive.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Stoonhaven rehearsal, I could not only run through the whole symphony, but even draw attention on a few things. I'm not a great talker, and they know that.
Right.
But I have to show it in my, well, in my physique, not only hands, but how I approach people visually. Maybe, I don't know. But that works with the Chicago. They're extremely professional.
Yeah. I should say that Mr. Heiting's face was lit up just then when he was sort of both describing and recalling these last few days with the orchestra. And that's a nice additional touch. It's a way that one communicates physically, I guess.
That's what I tell my students. I do quite a lot of lecturing or teaching, which is, of course, a bit silly because it is such a difficult, nearly obscure profession. But I always say, don't talk too much. For heaven's sake, don't start a first rehearsal for the first time that you come to an orchestra, and then you are, after the first bar, you want to tell them your vision, your totally unique vision. Don't do that, because after 2 minutes they fall asleep, in the best of cases, and otherwise they will be highly irritated.
Right. They mark you in their mental list as talks too much.
Immediately.
Yeah. I'll never forget seeing you with some young conductors. I don't want to say students, because at least two of them have been doing nice career since then, and the young man started to say something. I looked at you, and he started to say something else a few measures later, and then you kind of raised your finger like you were in the class, and you said, excuse me, Mr. X, when is it that you plan to speak to the orchestra during the performance? And I thought that really underscored for at least this listener. That
of course, a bit cruel, because of course you have to prepare.
Yeah.
And when you don't have to add something, then people will say, well, he just plays through and that's it.
Yeah.
And it's also not right.
Right.
To find a balance.
Right.
But it can be a grave mistake.
Yeah, I think in this case it was after you had observed this behavior over a couple of days and you were trying to poke him a bit. So.
Could be.
Did you have a first rehearsal in July of 1954 when you conducted the Radio Union Orchestra in the
Radio
Netherlands?
Radio Philharmonic.
Yeah.
Well,
or did you have to just jump and
no,
play the concert?
No, that was a result of... I was still at the conservatorium, and I was not allowed to attend a conductor's course organized by the Dutch Radio Union, as it was called at that time. And I went to my director, who was a lovely man, and he couldn't refuse anything to anybody. So I said, listen, well, you're not allowed, he said, but leave it to me. And then I was admitted to my entrance tests. And I don't think they were so brilliant, but I was admitted. And the funny thing was that there were two groups of 12 and two teachers. One extremely good Dutch conductor, Willem van Otterloo, and you must know the name. Mm-hmm. And the other was Ferdinand Leitner, who was music director in Stuttgart. And I had to do I had to conduct the Oberon Overture, and van Otterloo said, oh God, no, he's a fool. And Leitner said, yeah, maybe he is a fool, but it interests me. I want to try it with him. Hmm. So he made a 13th place for me.
In a course of 12, he made a 13th place. Yeah.
And so it happened. And after the first course, they said, you have to come back next year. In the meantime, we want you to play in one of our orchestras as a violinist.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, rehearsals that you know, start to know what that really means. So I did that, and I'm still grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then at my second course, and I have to say that then the Dutch conductor, Willem van Otterloo, came to me, and he was very gracious. Mm-hmm. He said, I made an error. And he was a very proud man.
Yeah.
It meant a lot to me.
Sure.
It's still not the answer, but the answer will come about your query about conducting.
Oh, no, this is fascinating.
Then at the end of the second course, we all had to choose a work and part of a symphony or an overture or a symphonic poem for an invited audience in the studio. That was important because it was with agents, etc. And I was terribly clumsy and shy, and I given very often the wrong impression. So there was a whole list of works, and I was more or less hiding behind the pillar. Mm-hmm. And then Leitner came to me and said, Bernard, what do you want to do? I said, oh, I don't know. Everything is gone already. The first movement of the Fifth Symphony of Tchaikovsky and Beethoven, the finale of Brahms. Well, he said, well, let's have a look then at the list. I see that Wagner, Vorspiel and Liebestod, Tristan, is still open. Do you know it? I said, no, it's a scandal, he said. It's a scandal. So you come tomorrow evening, you go home now, take the score, study it, and you come tomorrow evening in the studio. I will be there, and I will work with you. And I came, and he was a wonderful pianist.
Mm-hmm.
I said, now you conduct, and I will play. And that was a fantastic session.
Wow.
So 1.5 hours, nearly 2 hours. And then he said, so tomorrow morning, you have the rehearsal with the Radio Philharmonic, and you have to conduct that piece. I wish you well. So I came in the studio after, of course, a sleepless night.
Yeah.
And strange enough, I thought, well, I must do all these people, and I closed my eyes and start at the beginning.
Mm.
There was these long pauses, and I was, of course, trembling.
Right.
But apparently it went in such a way that they were impressed.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, that was after the first course, and then the second course, the same procedure, and that was the first movement of Bruckner 4.
Mm. So that piece has been around with you for a little while.
60 years, nearly. And after that, I got a beginner's job at the Dutch Radio as a young conductor who had to stand in, assist, and do different performances with four different orchestras, because mm-hmm. at that time it was still an incredible luxury. There were four orchestras there.
Four radio orchestras.
Yeah. No, it's got. Now there's only one orchestra left. But let's not go in that, because that's such an awful situation.
Right.
So that was Bruckner 4. Bruckner 4.
So what could have been, with the Tristan, a baptism of fire, wound up being kind of more a baptism of secret potion in a goblet, maybe, that carried you properly through. And then was it an introduction to Bruckner for you, or had you played in any of the...
No, but I loved Bruckner for my very early years on. It's very old for a young man, young boy. But that was the tradition in Amsterdam, and I went to every concert. And the then conductor, Eduard van Beinem, was a great Bruckner fan,
right.
And he did it wonderfully. He knew how to do it. No nonsense, no tunic things, just he got the music out of the whole confusion sometimes. So it was in the air.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot of all these years listening to and watching conductors.
Right.
And I have fantastic memories. I mean, a Beethoven cycle with Otto Klemperer, with Erich Kleiber,
mm-hmm.
Mahler's Suite with Erich Kleiber, which was a rarity because he didn't do that very often. And all sort of conductors who now are not there anymore, but... It was an incredible period of famous people. And the one who gave me the most satisfaction was Bruno Walter.
Uh-huh.
He came after the war.
Of course, yeah.
And again, because before the whole thing started, he was quite often in Amsterdam. He was even first conductor for a certain time. First guest conductor. And I have very vivid memories of Bruno Walter. One of them, and I talk too much, you have to...
No, you're just getting going.
I will never forget a concert with Mozart, G minor symphony, Köchel 550, four Mahler songs and Mahler 4. And my violin teacher was in the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And I got all the gossip out of him. Because orchestra musicians love to gossip. And after the G minor symphony, Walter stayed with the orchestra because in Amsterdam you have this huge staircase.
Right.
And when you are above a certain age, and I'm now in that bracket, you don't want to walk that staircase anymore.
For so American listeners, imagine these staircases that you see on awards shows, or it's a beautiful building, or in Las Vegas. But it doesn't look like Las Vegas, except for these crazy staircases.
Exactly. So he stayed with the orchestra after the G minor symphony, and he scratched his head, and I saw him talking to some of the members, but I couldn't hear. And I asked my teacher, what did he say? Oh, that was very interesting. He said, again, I didn't succeed with this piece. He was always frightened of Mozart's G minor symphony. And he started to conduct it after his 50th year.
Wow.
Amazing, because he was so known for his Mozart.
Of course, of course. But maybe a part of it was that he was known for the things that he did when he felt he was ready to do them, not for just doing the whole catalog from the first day.
Exactly. When one grows old, as I am, it's very dangerous that one thinks that in earlier times everything was better. Some things were better.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that I was still very lucky when I started. Far too young in Amsterdam, but I started there, and there was no way out, apparently, that I still had time to do things.
Yeah.
I remember when Eduard van Beijnen died, and I was approached, together with Eugen Jochum, which was a good decision. The Philips Record Company, at that time the record companies were still very flourishing and very strong.
And Philips, of course, was based in the Netherlands.
Sorry?
Philips was also based in the Netherlands, wasn't it? Yeah, right. So it was both international strong and the home company.
And they were left with a huge contract with the orchestra, among others, all the Mahler symphonies.
We're speaking of the music directorship of the Concertgebouw when von Beijnen died,
And strangely enough, Philips came to me and said, well, we want you to do that, and we will leave it to the artistic management to go into details. And at that time, there was a very good artistic administrator. I still miss him, even if I'm not with the orchestra anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what do you think about this Mahler project? I said, this bunkers is idiotic. How can I do 10 symphonies in 2 years? I'm willing to consider it.
Had you led any Mahler symphonies yet?
No, that's what I said. Yeah. I have done a few.
A few, all right, sorry.
Number 5 and number 1. But I want to, if it comes to a deal, I want to do 1 symphony a season. I have to learn it, I have to perform it. So it took me 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Philips agreed to that.
Wow.
So that would now have been impossible.
Right. You would have had to say yes or no, and that would be that.
Yeah.
In between those two important events we've been talking about, or periods, there was an introduction to the Concertgebouw podium, because a name familiar, quite familiar to Chicagoans, I would say, those of us 50 and over, Carlo Maria Giulini, he withdrew or canceled or was ill, scheduled for a concert, and they turned to Haitink.
Yeah, I was in the studio and I got a telephone call.
This is 1956, I think,
He didn't say, do you want to do it? He said, you have to do it. He said, may I know what the program is? Oh, that is Vivaldi, the 4 Seasons. At that time, was that not known?
Right, right. Yeah. Certainly not by a regular symphony orchestra.
Exactly. And then after the intermission, the Requiem by Cherubini. I never have heard of that.
Oh, my goodness.
And there are 2, apparently, one for male voices and one for mixed chorus.
Right.
And I had to do that one.
Wow.
But yeah, but there was one little thing in my favor.
Yes.
That piece I had done at the first public radio, with the Radio Philharmonic, with the first public concert, because normally a radio orchestra was not at that time allowed to play in public. That was a sort of
right
thing. And this was the first opening for the Holland Festival. And their conductor also died. I mean, my whole...
Maybe someone should look into these mysterious deaths, Maestro. Yeah,
exactly. Now I'm telling it, I feel ashamed. And as I was a young conductor in at the radio, they came to me and said, you have to do it. Again, you have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It was an idiotic program. It was in The Hague. It was with an overture by Gluck.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Ravel Piano Concerto. Crazy.
Crazy.
And then the Requiem of Cherubini.
Of course.
But apparently that was, people remembered that, and that was the reason.
Ah, okay. So when they said, would you, Lenny can't
asked,
play?
The same chorus in Amsterdam.
Right. They said, oh, there's this guy who knows who Cherubini is.
Yeah.
Right.
And there was another thing of luck. Of course, I was terribly frightened. And the first concert was the 6th of November, was the day of the Hungarian Revolution.
Mm.
And the management decided there should not be applause at the end of the concert. People
right.
should stand up and have
a silent moment
moment of silence. I thought, thank God. That
you don't have to be judged.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But they asked you back, and you were back for quite a few years as music director.
Yeah, well, not immediately.
No, I understand.
It took some time.
Yes.
And I wish it would have taken more time, because that's not an easy time for me, not at all. Because at that time, the orchestra was a really prima donna orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
They thought they were wonderful. But very often they were, but not always. And I was far too young, and not always diplomatic. And I felt so, all the claws in my back,
mm-hmm.
the public of the press, coming down over that staircase, which you mentioned. The first time I came down, one of the subscription ladies, I heard her say, God, what a baby. So it was very inspiring.
Yes, it's also a problem with a hall with such good acoustics that you can hear from the stage.
Exactly.
Was there a point with Concertgebouw where you felt you had reached the right balance and connection between artistic, personal,
yes, came.
When did that come?
Well, I think after 10 years.
Yeah.
It took a long time. And I remember we toured, mm-hmm. of course, but not as much as is done now. But we were supposed to do a Beethoven cycle in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the orchestra said, well, my God, must we do that with Haitink? That is ridiculous. Maybe I'm a little bit exaggerating now. Maybe it was not that unfriendly, but still.
Right, it's how it felt.
Yeah. And I remember we started in Ann Arbor, which has a wonderful audience,
mm-hmm.
I remember. And we did the horse cycle still there
does.
First. And Ashkenazi, Vova Ashkenazi, Vladimir Ashkenazi, played the 5 piano concerti.
Mm-hmm.
And then we toured and we ended in New York for the whole cycle. And that was, strangely enough, an enormous success. Mm-hmm. And that gave the orchestra confidence, because they were not only against me, but they were also doubting themselves.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, yes, we can do it, and he can do it, and that...
What year was that? What year was this, do you recall?
I think early 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we can check easily, yeah. But I was just curious, yeah.
So from there on, it was a very good relationship for another 10 years.
Yeah.
But then now you can't imagine a conductor who stays 20 years in well, we didn't have the title music director.
Right.
You were conductor of the concert.
Yeah.
But then it started slowly, apparently, that people wanted to change. Can't blame them. As one said, we had him 20 years. Maybe we have another conductor. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So that was badly handled by all parties,
right,
including me. Mm. It was very badly handled. And then I went to the Royal Opera's Covent Garden, thinking that I would have an easier life there.
How do you say in Dutch, out of the frying pan and into the fire?
Exactly.
Do you use the same?
Oh, yes.
Can you say it for us in Dutch?
In Dutch?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how it is in Dutch anymore. There isn't.
Well, if it comes to you.
It comes to me, I will remind
please,
you. Yeah.
Please share it. Yeah. It's all a reminder, though, isn't it, Maestro, that time and chance are both such important factors, and ones that we don't control, but that we can try to respond to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this idea of not wanting to be too early, but also not wanting to stay too long, maybe this comes back to Bruckner in some ways. Maybe that's also how we approach a piece of music that to some people seems unmanageable, is to understand how does it work? What's the clock inside of the music?
Yeah. Yes, time and luck, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. What did they... Fortuna was the Italian word, right, that Machiavelli said we always had to be aware of the mistress Fortuna.
It's true. And I felt at that time extremely embarrassed towards my colleagues from the conservatorium, etc., who always also wanted to be conductors. And where at the official conductor's class, I never was.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, even a very good friend who saw himself already as a sort of following up after Bruno Walter. And that didn't happen for all sort of reasons,
mm-hmm.
very embarrassing reasons, I'm afraid. And I felt very embarrassed because some of these people were much more talented, in my opinion, than me at the beginning, and I was very, very insecure.
Mm-hmm. Schulte described some, I mean, obviously his earlier calendar was different in terms of the war and his being in Hungary and a Jew and then stuck in Switzerland. And I mean, when I say stuck in Switzerland, I mean literally, not that Switzerland is a bad place,
but
literally could not leave.
Oh, imagine... man of that talent in Switzerland.
And he couldn't work because he had no papers.
Oh, terrible.
It's just so. But he also would talk to me and others about that period where he looked around and said, this classmate, this person, much better pianist, much better conductor, and somehow I started to get these.
Yeah.
But you don't then turn your back on it. You take advantage of the opportunity, right? And
yeah,
you
what
challenge
can you do?
Yourself.
Yeah.
What can you do?
You can't say, no, I will not accept this because he's much better than that. So
that would be
way.
A good way to kind of round out the career early.
Right? That you can say, yeah.
I'm trying to put this question without sounding overly cliched, but maybe just to put it simply, would allow for some conversation at least. 60 years ago, July, conducting this movement of the Bruckner Four, and this year conducting the whole Bruckner Four with Chicago and with some other orchestras that you've been associated with around the world, or at least on two sides of the Atlantic. Do you feel Bernard Haitink of 1954? Do you feel it's entirely something new, something in between?
Not that it's entirely new, no. Mm-hmm. As far as I can remember. But hopefully one develops.
Right.
It's not, of course, so easy that when you start, then it goes in an up, how do we say,
trajectory, or?
No, that it gets better all the time. That is not the case. I mean, it goes up and down, down and up.
Right.
But yes, I think that now I do slightly better than 60 years ago.
Well, leaving, I would imagine, we would hope that for each person in that situation. But aside from quote-unquote quality, are there stylistic or conceptual views that you find you have that are different now or that have changed over the time?
Yes, of course you are more critical. And as I'm not such a fan of myself, I don't like to listen to my own recordings.
Right.
And I'm in very good company, was in good company. Giolini always said that.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said, no, I don't listen to my recordings because I can't learn for myself.
Hmm.
Which, of course, is not entirely true because you can learn from the things you don't like.
Right.
Maybe sometimes the things you like also happens. Yes, and the Wagner in September, is it 13 or 2014? I will have my 60 years jubilee with the Radio Philharmonic, and I will.
You're going to go back to the home orchestra, the original.
Yes. In the Concertgebouw,
public
concert.
Oh, get your tickets now. I'm going to get mine.
And I will start with Wagner.
Wow.
Prelude, and final scene of Tristan.
Wow. What else will be on the program? Not Cherubini.
Not Cherubini. the seven early songs of Alban Berg.
Uh-huh.
And then Mahler 4 Symphony.
Okay.
With the same singer.
Right. Who is the singer?
Yeah, ask Patricia.
Okay, we will. And so this is sort of three different views of your history with these pieces, I guess. Three different ways, not even so much periods, because the pieces all kind of relate together, don't they? You go from Wagner to Mahler to Berg in some ways.
Yeah. But it is a special thing because the radio, as I said, the radio is in a very difficult position. And the Radio Philharmonic is the only orchestra I left, and I have become, to ask me to become a patron, which I happily did. And I wanted to stick my neck out a little bit. I also wrote in a major newspaper
about the importance of these institutions.
Yeah. But of course didn't help.
Yeah.
And the musical scene in Holland is terrible. I mean, so many orchestras are made redundant and musicians have to learn other jobs and so on. It's awful. So I thought I must make a sort of statement.
Of course.
And yes, I will do that concert.
Mm-hmm. It's another phrase we say, a shot in the arm. I mean, reinforcement of support. You have a 50th anniversary coming up with a small orchestra in Germany, Berlin Philharmonic. How did that initial concert come about, and what will you be doing for the 50th anniversary?
Well, they asked me to do Bruckner 4.
Yeah.
And
well, what had you done in 1964?
That was the first. I did was I had to accompany Claudio Arrau with all Beethoven Piano Concerto 5, and I was allowed to do the 3 Leonore overtures.
Interesting. Yeah, there you're dealing with, rather than these other people, come over right now, we need you, because there it's more like you may approach. I mean, I would imagine the administration at that time of the Berlin Philharmonic, that you are coming to us, we will hand you something to do.
Well, they had a total different orchestra at that time, of course, much older.
Yeah.
And they had a very important intendant, Stresemann.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the son of the political Stresemann. And he was a very, very good man. He came from the United States because he was in the States when the whole thing broke out.
Mm-hmm.
And he was even conductor himself.
Mm.
From the orchestra in Toledo, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. But
you know, the son of Zanderling is the conductor now in Toledo.
Really?
Yeah, one of the, he has three conductor sons.
I know.
But the good one, at least in my ear, Stefan, is in Toledo. Yeah.
So that's Berlin.
Yeah.
And I was very touched because they came to me and said, 50 years ago, I even didn't know it anymore.
Right, right.
And we want to have a little party, to Buchner for a Mozart concerto with guess who, with many acts.
Oh, well, you said, I think we can arrange that. Yeah. And of course now, I mean, it's been a great orchestra for so many years of its existence, but it also now has much more flexibility. It can respond, I imagine, to certain conductors and not just play in one way.
If they want.
If they want.
I like them. We always have a good relationship. The first, the first rehearsal is hell. And they know that because it's always closed, the first rehearsal. Mm-hmm. They don't want undoers because they are so disorganized as an orchestra. I mean, it is a huge orchestra. And they have, I think, 20 or 24 chamber ensembles.
Right.
And they go on tour all the time.
Right, right. You never know who's playing and when.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they never know because they come after their journeys. Oh, yeah. And then they go to the library and what's on tomorrow morning? Oh, and they are sight reading. And it's terrible. But then the second rehearsal, that is fantastic.
Uh-huh.
Then they are there.
Once the group is gelled, then.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And we should say for American listeners, one, where rehearsals are normally closed. In Europe, rehearsals tend very often to be open, at least to people connected with the orchestra or patrons or students. So to close a rehearsal means something, just as here, when a rehearsal is opened, it means something. And also there is this, we think with an American orchestra, well, we know who's sitting there every day, and we know, yes, you do, because we have a different setup here. And I'm sure there are advantages and disadvantages for everybody. But one thing I know that visiting conductors, particularly if they haven't been in the States or in Chicago in a long time, they say, every player was on stage, and they were there for the whole rehearsal. But, of course, in Chicago, many players are on stage even before the rehearsal.
Oh, yes.
They're practicing, they're reading, they're studying.
But that's what every good orchestra does. I mean, not all, but very often players are coming and looking at their parts.
No. In the U.S., you are marking these anniversaries, well, here, of course, this week, as an ongoing connection, fortunately for all of us. And you were with London Symphony in New York and in London, of course. You're going to be on the New York Philharmonic series. And you are reunited with the Boston Symphony.
Yes.
Which you had a long history with.
Yes, that's the oldest relationship for me. And I'm very fond of them, too.
How did it begin with you in Boston?
Such a long time ago.
What brought you all together?
They asked me.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it just continued on. Yeah.
And I'm very fond of them. And it's always a bit difficult for me. Chicago and Boston.
Yeah.
I really like both orchestras. I really like the musicians from both orchestras, but they're totally different. That starts with the hall.
Mm-hmm.
Symphony Hall is totally different from Symphony Hall. Symphony Hall in Chicago is totally different from Symphony Hall in Boston.
Right.
But the mentality, especially of the people around, the trustees, and is an enormous difference. I think that Chicago is more spontaneous, more straightforward. They do things. And Boston is always a bit slow in their decisions, very often. Especially the trustees, I think.
Mm.
In such a way that it was very difficult to get the right music director sometimes.
Yes.
In my opinion, they could have had Simon Rattle as music director, which I think would have been ideal,
mm-hmm.
with Tanglewood, etc. But that never worked out. Yeah. And I think that's not Simon's fault, but that is the way we are very English. Take our time, and the trustees, they're very proud, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're characterizing, I think, for us, something that we would say Midwestern, which we don't view as a bad thing, and New England. I mean, they are representing these styles.
Exactly.
Almost in a caricature, not a caricature, but...
No, but I find it very sympathetic and very attractive, Chicago. Yeah. They do things, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
And Boston is far more...
And how about musically? Is there something that characterizes the work of Boston or working with Boston for you?
Well, in a way, they have the same system with the working days, the schedules. The orchestra, of course, is in a better situation sound-wise because they have such
this
a
great
hall.
Yeah.
But therefore, they can be a little bit laid back because it sounds so wonderful. And Chicago has to fight every time because that hall is lousy. Yeah. Let's face it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's really interesting. And of course, in addition to being such a fine hall, its shape and concept happen to be a match for the hall in Amsterdam too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're using the shoebox, as they say.
Yeah. Well, I should not say that the hall is lousy, but the hall is...
It has sound issues. How
problematic.
About that? It's problematic from an acoustical point of view.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yes.
And we won't go into numbers, but with a special birthday coming up, where will you be then? Will you be doing a concert in the spring for your birthday? Or will you
be... Well, I don't think this is for my birthday.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, by coincidence, will you be somewhere?
I was recently in Tanglewood, and before that I was in Boston, and now I'm again as a guest.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just meant in terms of the menu of things you are doing in the course of the year. So you will have a jubilaum in Amsterdam with the radio union, and you will have a 50th anniversary with Berlin.
Yeah.
And will you have anything for your own 85th anniversary, or will that be just a chance to have some cake by yourself?
I keep that hidden.
Yeah. Okay. I just have to express again my thanks and the thanks of all of us here in Chicago for the time that you spend with us musically and personally. It's I was thinking during the concert Thursday night, and even even for Haitink, I go into a concert waiting to hear what will happen. I haven't written the review until after I hear it, but I was just thinking, how can I, as the evening went along, I said, how can I characterize this without sounding as if I'm writing a greeting card or something? Because it's really been a gift, and I feel it. I turn my head too often during a performance, perhaps, but as I was watching the audience, I said, you know, there's a connection here from the podium to the players to the audience and back to the podium that has developed during this, well, it was a 4-year residency, but over these 7 years, and it's really been a gift for us, and we hope that it's one that can continue as long as you would like it to continue, and that you have had benefits from it as well.
I'm not a youngster anymore,
right?
So we have to see,
right?
But I will. We made plans for next year, and we'll see.
Yeah. What will you bring next year?
I don't know
that
yet.
You don't know.
No.
So this is interesting. You know the programs from 60 years ago, but you're still thinking about the program from next year. That's called being an artist, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, it's mechanical.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And we don't ever expect anything mechanical from Bernard Haitink. That's another part of his gift to us. Maestro Haitink, thank you so much. And toi 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 for the special commemorations, anniversaries. And in all seriousness, for those of you who find yourself traveling or are listening in other countries, do look at the calendar for this season, because there are some very special concerts with many orchestras. Now we know, including the Radio Philharmonic of the Netherlands, that you should fit into your calendar if you find yourself in London, Amsterdam, Berlin, New York, or probably some other ports of call. Bernard Haitink, thank you again for your time.
Well, thank you.
Music we heard, the scherzo from the Symphony No. 4 in E-flat major called Romantic from the mid to late 1870s of Anton Bruckner from the LSO Live London Symphony Orchestra live recording with Bernard Haitink, recorded 14 and 16 June 2011, so 2.5 years ago, a James Mallinson production, Jonathan Stokes and Neil Hutchinson engineers, David Pyatt, P-Y-A-T-T, principal horn, recorded at the Barbican in London. We'd like to thank, of course, Bernard Haitink, Patricia Haitink, Eric Arunas for recording this interview for us, Matt DeStefano for putting the whole program together and making it sound great. Rentap, R-E-N-T-A-P, at AOL.com, WFMT.com/critical thinking, the always free critical thinking podcast of this and any of our other programs. I'd like to thank Alphawood Foundation, our funder, and other friends and funders of this program. I'm Andrew Patner. We'll see you next week.